AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ed Donahue. The House passed a bill to protect same-sex marriage.
An historic step forward in Democrats' fight to defend the dignity and equality of every American.
After passage in Speaker Nancy Pelosi's House, President Biden is expected to promptly sign the measure, which requires all states to recognize same-sex marriages. Among those voting no, Missouri Republican Vicky Hartzler.
I'll tell you my priority. Protect religious liberty, protect people of faith, and protect Americans who believe in the true meaning of marriage.
Democrats are concerned after the Supreme Court overturned the right to an abortion, fearing banning same-sex marriage may be next. With WNBA star Brittany Griner freed from a Russian prison, Griner's wife Sherelle says,
"Today my family is whole, but as you all are aware, there are so many other families who are not whole."
Griner was released in exchange for the U.S. release of a Russian arms dealer. American Paul Weyland is still being held in Russia on espionage charges.
BG and I will remain committed to the work of getting every American home, including Paul, whose family is in our hearts today as we celebrate BG being home.
A new AP NORC poll shows 43% approve of the way President Biden is handling his job, while 55% disapprove. This is AP polling reporter Hannah Fingerhut.
Only about a quarter of Americans say the nation is headed in the right direction or that the economy is in good shape. Both ratings have similarly been negative throughout this year as inflation tightened its grip, but remain lower than they were during Biden's first year in office.
A House committee report says the NFL's Washington Commanders created a toxic work culture for more than two decades, ignoring and downplaying sexual misconduct by men at the top levels of the organization. The NFL was also criticized for its handling of the investigation of the Commanders and owner Daniel Snyder. This is AP News.
Paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE. 855-51-BIBLE.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress? But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, and our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Newport Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. American Red Cross employees are preparing to go on strike during the Upper Midwest's largest blood drive on the 23rd if there's not a new contract agreement by a week from today. Union employees have been trying to reach a new deal for almost a year and a half. The Red Cross has canceled or rescheduled 21 meetings in that time and is telling negotiators there isn't money for pay raises. The idea of passenger train service in Madison is back on track. City leaders are getting public input on 5 proposed train stops in Wisconsin's capital. It's not a foregone conclusion. Washington still hasn't released the money, and the city and state would have to agree on specifics. In sports, the Bucks beat Sacramento last night. College volleyball's Sweet 16 play today. Wisconsin hosts Penn State, and Marquette takes on top-seeded Texas. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour. A reminder that if you like our show, please tell your friends.
Yes.
Because we are a growing show on growing networks and stations across the state. And we could definitely use your help because we're doing stuff differently as far as when it comes to talk radio, the topics we pick, the guests we get, and we need help to spread the word. And so, as always, we want to hear from you, 844-967-2789. And we're going to do some more headlines and just things that caught my eye that I feel like we should discuss. But first, I want to do a little bit of a shout out because I might have had Skittles for dinner last night. Not really. I had real food.
Good.
But then I had cookies for breakfast, thanks to Periwinkle's Bakery on 143 West Broadway, right here in Waukesha. They dropped off cookies for us yesterday.
I know.
Shout out to Connie. She wrote us a little Christmas, little note on a package of Christmas cookies. It says, "Thanks for all you do." So thank you for those cookies, and they're delicious.
They are delicious, and they're beautiful.
They are beautiful. There is something, as much as I love a good chocolate chip cookie, the festive, decorated Christmas cookies are much more beautiful.
Something special.
Something special. All right. Well, I wanted to talk about this yesterday, but we didn't have time, because while we talked about this morning, you know, what job would you do for free? Same kind of question, different side of the coin. How much would it take for you to move to a different part of the state?
Ooh.
Do you have a number?
For a salary?
No. To help you buy a home.
How much would it take?
Well, you already have a home, and I already have a home, so right. We're maybe not the target audience, but...
So we're talking about a younger, maybe not.
Just, you know, it's in the realm of trying to buy a house, as, you know, if you pay attention to the news, not only just in Wisconsin, across the country, affordable housing is a issue. As more and more private equity and private companies are buying homes, there's lots of wealthy people who are buying second and third homes so that then they can then Airbnb them. And so the supply of affordable starter homes is limited and
expensive.
And, you know, for a lot of places, the rent is as much as a mortgage payment would be. But the problem is becomes that that first down payment and not having that much money to be able to put on the down payment. Well, Green Bay, in their efforts to attract and recruit more people to live in Green Bay, is starting a new initiative. So Great Being Home will offer up to $10,000 in a down payment assistance to anyone who buys a Green Bay home and works for the city for a city-based business with fewer than less than 25 employees, or for a Green Bay-based nonprofit. So this launched this Tuesday, And there's obviously some requirements, but the city of Green Bay had originally seeded the program with $250,000 from American Rescue Plan Act dollars. And it was enough to give 50 different home buyers $5,000 each. And then NeighborWorks Green Bay is going to administer the program and draw on other down payment assistance programs to match the city's incentive to increase the benefit each home buyer can receive to up to $10,000, which that's a significant portion of a down payment.
I don't think it's enough.
Really?
No.
Well, I don't know. So I don't, in Green Bay, I don't know what the market looks like right now.
What's the average for a starter home?
And it may not be the whole thing, but it's certain. I mean, $10,000 for a down payment, especially if I think if you're a younger couple, because isn't there also assistance programs for first-time home buyers as far as how much of the down payment you have to, like the percentage of it is less as an additional incentive program?
That could be. It's been a long time since I was a first-time home buyer.
Yeah,
so, but I mean, you used to be required to put down 20%.
See, I don't think we put down 20% this year. No, I think it was
much less
than that. And I think this would actually make a big difference for people. And so the incentive is trying to address two big challenges that I think Green Bay is facing, but I think a lot of Wisconsin and I think a lot of places are feeling this, the same thing, maybe besides Madison. As we know, Dane County was the only county in Wisconsin that grew over the last 10 years when it comes to population. But the challenge being more families can find home ownership because it's hard to do right now. But also employers are struggling to attract and retain workers. And so part of this all goes into having, you know, on the employer side is having affordable housing within driving distance to where your business is.
Yeah.
So you can have this statewide labor shortage in so many different industries is partially because of either the transportation infrastructure of people being able to get to work without necessarily needing a car, but also being able to live close to where they work and being able to afford a home close to where they work. And so I think this is a good thing. It would be interesting to see, one, if it works, but two, if it gets replicated. Because obviously this is something that I don't know how long it can last for because it was part of the ARPA money. But there's also just companies that are matching the benefits because they can see the benefit that it's going to provide to them.
It's tough, and more and more employers are going to have to start stepping up and figuring out what they can offer in order to get the bodies that they need.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that rents are so high,
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't be 60% of your salary just to put a roof over your head.
I know. Well, especially in the feeling of why am I paying this much in rent that just goes down the drain when it could, you know, when a mortgage would be the same, and the big hurdle is just that down payment.
Right.
Because that's the same thing that happens in Milwaukee. I'm sure it happens in Waukesha. I'm sure it's happening all over the place as far as just the incongruent balance between what wages are, what salaries are, and how expensive it has gotten to both for rent and housing costs.
Well, and still, isn't it pretty much the norm that the average American doesn't have an extra $5,000 on hand, even for emergencies?
Let alone a down payment.
Yeah, let alone 5 to 10, 15 grand for a down payment on a house.
Yeah. Well, some other kind of similar but different good news as far as workforce training and education is that enrollment at Wisconsin technical colleges has grown by 10%.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so across the country, across the state with the pandemic, colleges and universities definitely saw a decline. And I think the UW system, besides Madison, I've seen numbers for that, as there's certainly more and more of a decline of people going to the four-year colleges of the UW system. And Jay Rothman, there's different programs trying to increase, whether it's scholarship money or the last mile for students who come from families that make less than $65,000 a year. So there's all these different ways that people are trying to increase enrollment for different schools. But it's good to know that enrollment across the Wisconsin Technical College system has grown more than 10% in this last academic year. And so there's 16 different technical colleges, and across all of them, there was gains. And I can't stress enough how I feel like the technical college, community college option could be a huge key to the overall cost of going to school. And also I feel like the opportunity of, as we see additional stories coming out of the COVID generation of the kids who were in high school and spent so much of their high school experience was disrupted by at-home learning and going back to school and all of the stuff, and like the learning loss that has happened there, and kids showing up to college maybe not necessarily prepared to be in college.
Right.
Because I'll say, like, I started at community college, and this was in California, so I know less about what the technical community college curriculum looks like in Wisconsin. I assume it's good. But at least my experience of, I didn't go to college right away because I was acting. And as I was acting, I was like, oh, is this it? Is this really what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, is audition? And started taking classes kind of just out of interest and fun at Santa Monica College, and feeling like I liked school. And all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I was like, I'm actually really good at this. And the opportunity to learn how to go to college in a smaller environment, with the professor to student ratio being much smaller than it would be at a public university, and really learning and like taking all my general ed requirements mm-hmm. at there, and then getting to transfer to, not to toot my own horn, but one of the best public universities in the country, if not the world, and getting to go to the opportunity to go to UC Berkeley. But like, I would never have gotten in there as a freshman. And I don't think I would have thrived had I not been able to get that foundation by going to community college. And so I'm very encouraged that it sounds like the Wisconsin technical colleges are, one, seeing more of enrollment, and also changing their curriculum to different student needs in order to try to attract more people. And so, like, they're building more flexibility into class schedules so that they can accommodate people who have kids and, like, childcare, and they're providing more online options. And so, like, the flexibility and not being so rigid in the attempt to give more people an option to continue their education, I think is a really good thing. And it'd be interesting to see if the UW system can learn some of this as well, as far as they are trying to recruit and increase enrollment across all the different campuses.
I so wish I had done that. I wish I had gone to a community college first, because I think I would have finished college had I done that.
And I feel like there is... shame feels like a really strong word, but in the pressure to go to college, go to a good college, go to the best college, and this idea that there is some kind of embarrassment around not going to 4-year university as an 18-year-old, like, just the more we can debunk that, I think the better, because education is education, even if you're just taking one class at a time.
And especially for people, I was from a very small town, it had 8,000 people. I went to the University of Minnesota. That was the campus was bigger than my hometown. I was afraid of the bus drivers. So it would have probably helped me to start a little smaller.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll have a couple more headlines. And then at 12:30, we are talking to Dr. Scott Saunders about addiction medication in hospitals. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Taking it to the street.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
What is dedication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 37 this afternoon under cloudy skies. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Lows dip down to about 30. A mixture of precipitation likely tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 35. Overcast skies. 1 to 3 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It is 12:21. Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour. We've got a couple more headlines that we wanted to highlight before we move on to welcoming Dr. Scott Saunders at the bottom of the hour. But unless something has changed, there are now 4 Republicans running for the 8th Senate District in Wisconsin. As of yesterday, Thienesville Village President Van Mobley tells WISP Politics that he is getting in the race. And so Mobley is in his 4th term as village president, but he is the 4th Republican to announce plans to run for this seat in the special election, which I think has still not been
scheduled.
And if it's going to align with the other upcoming, like, planned nonpartisan races that we have coming up, including the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But this is Alberta Darling's seat. And so far, it is Janelle Brangen, who is a assembly rep in that district of Menominee Falls, Dan Knodel of Germantown, Concordia student Robert Albertson.
Really?
Which I hadn't, until I read this about Van Mobley. He lives in Brown Deer, and he is running, so it's a young Republican, I imagine. But as of still, doesn't sound like there's a Democrat running. Have you heard of anything? Rumblings after Deb Andraka said that she will not be running for this seat. Have you heard anything as far as someone who is running?
For some reason, I want to say that Devils talked about this yesterday.
Oh, really?
And I am drawing a complete blank. I don't know that anyone from the Democratic Party has officially filed.
But there's rumors?
There are some rumors.
Because it'll be interesting. It's interesting that it's 4 in such a short period of time. But it goes back to the ongoing conversation about, you know, recruitment. This is as we talked about at the beginning of the hour, this is part of Ben Wickler's job.
Yeah.
I'm sure now that the job is over for the November election, this is probably on his mind of trying to see who we could get to run for that seat. Because while it does lean more Republican, it sounds like it is potentially, it's a seat that could be flipped for Democrats.
With
the right candidate. And the reason why that is important is because as of right now, with no person, because Alberta Darling is now retired. So starting this legislative session, while they, being the Republicans, had a supermajority in the Senate, without that seat, they do not. And so if they can flip that seat, it will keep the GOP in Wisconsin from having a supermajority in the state Senate.
And remind folks what it would mean if the GOP has a supermajority in the Senate.
So from what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically they can impeach different appointments. And as far as I mean, there's already so many appointed seats that have not been approved, but that's what I understand is why it's so important as far as while they can't, they would also need a supermajority in the assembly to override Governor Evers' veto of things. It's while just having a supermajority in the Senate, it comes down to appointments and being able to impeach appointed positions if they don't do their job or break the rules or if they find a different arbitrary reason to do that.
They haven't appointed anybody yet.
I know.
We still have bad cartons of cottage cheese sitting on all these boards who should have been gone 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yes. Well, then Wisconsin made national news. And some, you know, sometimes it's really, I feel like the ratio of Wisconsin making national news for a good reason versus a bad reason, I don't know what that ratio is. And not necessarily this is a bad reason. This could probably happen anywhere. But it did happen at the Dane County Madison Airport. If you're going to travel with your small pets.
I saw this.
You're going to travel with your small pets this holiday season. Please do not put them in your carry-on backpack.
And send it through the x-ray machine.
The TSA in Madison, which if you've ever flown out of the Madison Airport, It's grown, and there are more and more direct flights you can get in and out of Madison now, but it is still a very tiny little airport that is very easy to get through, and I've been through it plenty of times, and I'm just trying to imagine the TSA found a dog inside a backpack that was accidentally sent through the x-ray machine this past week, and so it just a reminder that if you're going to bring your small dog onto the plane, they need to be in a specific like carrier,
yes,
meant for pets, not in your backpack.
And you don't send them through the x-ray machine.
I'm just surprised. I guess it was a little like wiener dog chihuahua mix, so I'm sure it was adorable. But they printed this picture in this was in USA Today. I saw it in multiple places. In all the newsletter roundups I got, this was the story, made a lot of them. And they printed this little picture of this poor little dog inside this backpack. And was he trying to hide him?
Whoever did this wasn't charged with anything, from what I understand.
No, I
thought it was just a mistake. But
do you think, did she think that she wasn't, that it was,
that they weren't going to see
it? It's an x-ray machine. Do you think it was a first-time flyer? Like, I'm so confused over the decision-making process of how she got here, or he. I actually don't know if the person whose dog it was is a male or a female. But please don't do that.
Yeah. No, don't do that. And if it is your first time flying, maybe look up some rules. Like, don't bring a loaded gun.
That too. Do not do that.
It happens shockingly frequently, even now, Derek Van Orden.
Yeah, but just please, animals should never be put through an x-ray tunnel.
No.
Please don't do that.
No.
So, all right, well, we're going to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to have a conversation around addiction specialists and the need for them in more hospitals with Dr. Scott Saunders, who, fun fact, when he did his residency, it was at UW-Madison, and he was the chief resident. So still a Wisconsin connection. It always comes back to Wisconsin. All right, stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I meant it just 'cause you heard it.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. son más que una empresa, son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Marquesan y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir a...
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. WNBA star Brittney Griner is free. She was in prison in Russia on drug charges and was released in exchange for the U.S. release of a Russian arms dealer. The U.S. has also been trying to work out the release of American Paul Whelan, accused of espionage. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was asked why Griner was released and not Whelan.
This was not a choice of which American to bring home. The choice was one. Or none.
South Carolina women's basketball coach Dawn Staley is a friend of Griner. She told the AP.
Everyone that doubted this moment and everybody that will criticize Brittney coming home for who we had to trade her for, this is an American citizen. And anytime we can bring any American citizen home, then we need to do that.
Paul Whelan's family says the Biden administration made the right decision by agreeing to the swap, but they're devastated. Whelan remains behind. I'm Ed Donahue.
Paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month. And that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE. 855-51-BIBLE.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. Wisconsin company Packers Sanitation Services Incorporated, which was found to be employing minors to clean slaughterhouses in three states, has been ordered by a federal judge to comply with child labor laws. Initially, investigators found at least 31 underage workers as young as 13. Further investigation found at least 50 minors scrubbing and sanitizing dangerous equipment on overnight shifts. At least five meatpacking plants in Nebraska, Minnesota, and Arkansas have been identified as employing minors. PSSI agreeing to fire underage workers and sanction any managers who were involved in hiring them. The meat processing companies who own the plants where the workers were identified say they're monitoring the investigation and will consider taking action against PSSI if necessary. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in on your lunch hour. If you've missed any part of today's show, you can always listen to the whole thing or individual interviews as a podcast, either at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. And so during the break, we got a couple texts from what we were talking about before, right, Jane?
We did. We weren't sure if the special election had been set for the 8th District, and texter from the 608 said, yes, Governor Evers has announced the election for the same time as the Supreme Court race. And then 507 checking in when we were talking about the down payment on a house and what the minimum down payment is right now. 507 says, my son-in-law is a mortgage broker. Minimum down payment now, 3.5%. So $10,000, a big help.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a down payment. So thanks, you guys, very much.
We love getting texts and calls from you because we don't know everything. Contrary to popular belief, I do not know everything. So keep them coming, 844-967-2789. But our topic for this half hour, I think, affects a lot of people. It affects people all over the country right now, whether it's you personally or a loved one. Because I saw this article in NPR that was the headline was, hospitals have specialists on call for lots of diseases, but not addiction. Why not? And I saw that, and I immediately thought of my dear friend, Dr. Scott Saunders, who is a board-certified internist practicing hospital medicine at University of Colorado Hospital in Denver, because not only is he an MD, who, by the way, was the chief resident when he did his residency at UW-Madison, but he also, last time we were all together, we told me that he's now certified also in addiction medicine and being a specialty in that. And it wasn't until reading this article that I realized what a niche he's filling in right now. And so here to talk to us about the need for this specialist in hospitals, but that we're not necessarily having, is Dr. Scott Saunders. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So I guess, the crux of this story is that what we all know is that there is a crisis with opioid and fentanyl addiction and overdoses, and the opportunity for hospitals to be kind of the crucial impasse to intervene and treat people suffering from addiction, it could make a huge difference. But there's just, most hospitals don't have specialists available who know how to treat addiction. And so was that your motivation for even wanting to go advanced, like get more education and get specialized in this, because you saw that there was like kind of a dearth there?
So yeah, it wasn't my realization myself, but we have a faculty member at the University of Colorado named Dr. Susan Calcaterra, who is board certified herself. I think she was boarded in 2018 around then. And she ended up getting a grant to train 10 of us hospitalists, not in an official fellowship, but to basically catch us up with enough knowledge of the medicine to staff a consult service. So she saw the need at our hospital for that and then trained a bunch of us up and staffed this consult service with the goal of getting us all board certified in the next several years. So that's how I got into it.
So to back up a little bit, because I'll totally admit, even though we're good friends, what is a hospitalist? And so, like, when you went through med school in your residency to be a hospitalist, what does that cover as far as being an MD in a hospital?
Yeah, so I'm a general practitioner in the terms of just, I practice general internal medicine. And so through internal medicine, you can either become a general practitioner and just stop there after residency and become like a primary care doctor, or practice general medicine in the hospital, or you can go on and do fellowships and subspecialize to a lot of things that people have heard of, like cardiology, pulmonology, lung doctors, things like that. So as a hospitalist, I practice general medicine in the hospital, and I usually tell people my age, like if your parents are admitted to the hospital with a common medical diagnosis, I'll probably be the one taking care of them. And if there's multiple specialists that are needed, I'll be kind of the quarterback of the team and kind of guide their care.
So then, as you've now gone through training to be specialized in addiction treatment, what did that look like as compared to all of your training and all of your med school and your residency? And was that just information that was totally void in everything you learned before, as far as what you needed to learn to be able to do these bedside consults?
Yeah, it was. I was chatting with some of my residency colleagues earlier this week about what we experienced in residency with addiction medicine. And it's vastly different than how I practice now and how I teach my students and resident doctors. So there's been a huge shift, I think, in how residency programs approach addiction medicine. It's a required part of training for internal medicine physicians, where it didn't used to be. So that has hugely changed. And for most subspecialties, you have to complete a fellowship. And that's where things are trending with addiction medicine. So in 2025, you'll have to do a true blue fellowship where you go somewhere, train there for a year. That's all you're doing. But in kind of the development of any subspecialty throughout the history of medicine in America, at least when people subspecialize enough on their own, let's say they did enough eye medicine, eventually they, you know, a board forms and people decide, well, people probably should have actual training in eye medicine. And so at that point, they'll grandfather a lot of people in, you know, if you've been doing ophthalmology for 30 years, just because that's how you niched yourself, they'll grandfather you in and you may have to take boards and things like that, but you don't have to do that, you know, that actual fellowship training. So I'm being grandfathered in and I took my boards in October. So I'm board eligible, hopefully board certified very soon when I pass it. But that's kind of, this is such a new area and a new need in America that the system is catching up to the practice that's happening.
Because, you know, I think, and it sounds like from reading this article and talking to you, that both on the side of doctors and employees of hospitals, but also patients themselves and even patients of loved ones, the mental switch of treating addiction as a disease versus a moral failing, and that it is something that requires more than just self-control and discipline to get over this. And so is that kind of the big switch that you've seen as far as getting this training and how doctors are being hopefully trying to switch how they approach someone who is also struggling with addiction?
100%. And the flow of patient care is totally different when I'm on the addiction medicine service, because I get to sit down and spend an hour with the patient. And I basically, my opening question to them is, you know, hey, I'm with this consult service. I'm here to help people that may be struggling with X, Y, or Z substance that I know they struggle with. And I say, I hear that that's really impacted your life. Do you mind telling me how it's impacted your life? And, you know, when I have my internal medicine hat on, I'm typically going in saying like, hey, how are you feeling today? Okay, that's great. Here's going to be our plan for the day. Here's the specialist I'm talking to. I'll circle back with you later when I have more info. You know, so I get to sit down and really hear people's life stories. And some of these patients, it's like, well, yeah, there's, of course you became addicted to whatever, you know, you were so set up to fail by all these things in your life that you couldn't control. And you also get to hear kind of how much they have struggled with whatever they're using. You know, I would say upper 90% of the people that I see in the hospital that struggle with substance use don't want to be using that substance. You know, they're no longer enjoying it. They're not getting euphoric from anything they're using. It's really just hurting their life. And they're, especially with opioids, people are mainly using to stay out of withdrawal, so to feel normal. And so hearing that and actually kind of getting to build my own empathy for people that struggle with this was huge for me. And so that's one thing that I really, you know, when I have residents and students that come through, I spend a lot of time talking with them about that, because I think, you know, if I see that same person with my internal medicine hat on, I may have 10 or 15 minutes with them while I'm rounding. And as you could imagine, if somebody's feeling really terrible because they're withdrawing, because their life is, you know, completely falling apart around them, it's really hard to be a likable person in that situation, right? Yeah. You feel terrible. And so I think healthcare providers can get the wrong sense of who a person is, and it makes it easy to just write them off and say, well, that's just not a nice person. And, you know, they don't deserve the same kind of treatment somebody else might. And so building that empathy for our own providers, I think has been a huge part of my own growth and also the growth for my learners.
We're talking to Dr. Scott Saunders, who is an internist at University of Colorado Hospital, but also is recently an addiction treatment specialist. And so we're talking about the need for more of you, basically, in hospitals across the country. As a country, we have such a crisis in opioid overdose. But what also, one of the things I learned in this article, the NPR article that I found, was that disclosing an addiction can sometimes make it hard for that person to then find housing or a job or even sometimes medical care in other hospitals. It sounds like not yours. But so how often are you dealing with potential, like they come in, like a patient comes in for something else and you kind of have to get it out of them that they're also struggling with addiction because they don't even want to admit that to a doctor?
Yeah, good question. I think the one of the biggest ideas in addiction medicine is that a person to feel ready to change and want to change in some capacity. Typically for opioids, people, if they don't want to talk to me, that's totally fine. I'll respect that. But I will say to them, one thing I don't want to happen is I don't want you to go through withdrawal and be miserable while you're here. So if you're concerned about that, let me know. I'll make sure we manage that appropriately and keep you comfortable. And if they say I'm not, then I say, okay, sounds good. Our team's here if you need us. People will get frustrated, I think, if a urine drug screen shows positive for a drug and the patient doesn't want to talk about it or doesn't, admit it if they ask them. And it's really like, well, if they want help and they want to talk to us about it, they will. And that's totally fine. So kind of giving them the agency to control that part of their care, I think, is an important part of how we approach them.
But Scott, in order to effectively treat someone, you really need all of that information. If someone comes in with a broken arm and they're addicted to opioid, you need to know all of that in order to effectively take care of them.
That's true. And I'll say the biggest thing would be like if somebody starts withdrawing from a substance, but people are really open. I mean, unless they're just fooling me and I'm not, people are just lying to me and I don't know. But generally, especially if somebody uses opioids and if you approach them and say, hey, I'm here to help you in any way that I can, that you think is appropriate, people are really responsive to that. And I think it's such a way that a lot of people have not been treated in a hospital before. Like just coming to them like a person and saying, I'm just trying to make you comfortable. So generally people are really frank, which was kind of surprising to me too, when I started this, but they'll tell you, what's going on, and they truly don't want to withdraw. That's like a pretty horrendous experience for people. And so if that's on the table, that we can help keep them out of that, they're generally quite honest.
It's so interesting because I think, and we're going to keep you through the commercial break, because I think it's also interesting because of thinking about addiction as, like we said, a disease and something that I assume that some people are more predetermined to fall prey to because of background biology. And so I want to talk about more about that as far as like how much it changes depending on what the addiction is to, and also how that changes treatment plans. And then any ideas you have as far as like how hospitals can invest more in people like you, because it seems like this is something that there's a unique opportunity to help people while they are in the hospital versus just waiting for them to try to find help. And so we are going to keep Dr. Scott Saunders through the commercial break. If you have any questions for him, he'll be here for another 8 minutes in the next segment. So 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay with us.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music. Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 37 this afternoon under cloudy skies. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Lows around 30. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. A mixture of precipitation likely. Daytime highs approaching 33. 1 to 3 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Dr. Scott Saunders, who is a board-certified internist practicing hospital medicine and addiction medicine at University of Colorado Hospital, about the need for more doctors and hospitals and or specialists in general to be treating addiction when patients come in that need that kind of help. And it's something that I guess as a country we have a lack of currently. And I think we had a question that's a caller in that came in over the break.
We did. We had a caller from the Rapids wondering, Scott, because you're in Colorado, do you know, are there any hospital facilities in Wisconsin that offer what your facility is offering in Colorado?
Yeah, so I was chatting with some of my colleagues at the University of Wisconsin because I thought if I'm going to be on a Wisconsin radio show, I should probably know what's happening. So in Madison, I know there's a similar group of providers, like addiction medicine specialists, social work, case managers, things like that, that will help. I'm not sure about in the other cities around the state, but at least at the university, they have that. And then I talked to, you know, one of the biggest issues with this is linkage to care. So it's great if you can start somebody on a medicine like Suboxone or methadone in the hospital, but it doesn't really do much for somebody if you can't get them follow up in a nearby clinic where they can continue that treatment as an outpatient. So talking to my primary care friends, that's been a barrier for how do you set that clinic up for people. Who staffs it? Is it primary care doctors? Is it addiction medicine providers? Trying to build that infrastructure as we go, I think has been a challenge for probably everybody around the country.
Well, and I would imagine, I have no numbers to back this up, but I mean, in that article, they said 1 in 9 hospitalized patients has a history of an addiction to drugs or alcohol, which is a wildly huge number. But I think there's so much, we hear so much about opioids and fentanyl, largely, I think, because that's there's a lot of overdoses. And like you said, the withdrawal from that is horrendous. But how much does the treatment plan change with someone who is an alcoholic or addicted to cocaine? And is there, because there's not like a supplement methadone plan, I would say, in the same way it seems like there is for opioids.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. So for opioids, we've got two fantastic medicines that are the gold standard of treatment. So Suboxone and methadone. So relapse rates are incredibly high if your plan in the hospital is to just come off of opioids and stay off of them, not replace that with anything with
cold
any medication.
Turkey. Yeah,
right. Unfortunately, we don't have those same medicines for other use disorders. So for alcohol, we have a few that we could offer. You know, everyone's heard of antabuse, where you get sick if you drink while you're taking it. We don't really use that anymore. We have the two main medicines that we use would be naltrexone and acamprosate, which help decrease cravings for alcohol. But for basically for every use disorder besides opioids, the other parts of treatment become that much more important. Things like any kind of rehab, whether that's inpatient or outpatient, things like group meetings. Everyone's heard of AA, but there's so many different types of meetings out there. I tell my patients, whatever kind of person you are, there is a group of you meeting outside somewhere talking about this. You know, we have, there's like Dharma Recovery here in Colorado, which has like, you know, Buddhist inspired approach. There's like Pagans in Recovery. There's outdoor recovery groups. There's all sorts of things like that. And then we also talk to families about, you know, it's hard to be a person with a use disorder, and it's hard to be a person that loves a person with a mm-hmm. use disorder. And so having those resources to help family members know, like, how do you set appropriate boundaries with this person that you love so much that you're seeing go through this much suffering? How do you support yourself? How do you support their kids? All those kinds of things. And then also thinking of mental health can be a huge factor in all of these things. So, you know, some people with alcohol use disorder may drink partially because they've got really uncontrolled anxiety. So how do we hook them up with a therapist, with a psychiatrist that can help manage these underlying mental health diagnoses that may be contributing to their use disorder? So, yeah, unfortunately, we don't have those kind of like silver bullet medications, but we still do have a lot of supports that we can help hook people into.
Because I think it was when we were talking that you set it up in such a distinct way that really stuck out, which is why I thought of you immediately when I read this article, which is this idea of a shift in your thought process or the way you think about addiction as being a disease versus a moral failing. And in what you've learned as you've gained this specialty in addiction medicine, like how much of someone who, you know, because we talk about an addictive personality. So how much is it, someone who has a use disorder is about their unique biology and, you know, traits that they inherited from family members versus their environment?
Oh, yeah. Interesting question, because I don't think it has to be. I think they can both be true, yeah. And they interact with each other. So there are certainly some use disorders that are more genetically linked than others. So for alcohol use disorder, if somebody has really severe alcohol use disorder, typically I'm guessing that somebody in their family does as well before I go see them. Whereas things like opioids, it's very much a chemical process in our brains that happens. And so all of us are more likely, if we abused alcohol versus opioids, we're all much more likely to end up with opioid use disorder than we would as a whole with alcohol use disorder. But I think thinking about genetics and your lived experience and kind of traumas that you've gone through, those can impact your genetics. Mm-hmm. Even when we're in the womb, there's something called epigenetics, where our genome gets changed in some ways, and how genes are expressed gets changed. And trauma that your mother goes through can impact how your genes are expressed, for example. And so much of it, there's some of it that's genetic. And then I think so much of it is also, what did you go through growing up? How many adverse childhood events did you go through? What kind of coping mechanisms did you grow up with that did your parents teach you when you're feeling anxious or depressed or things like that? You know, what kind of neighborhood did you grow up with? What kind of people were you surrounded with? What culture was that? And so, depending on your circumstance, that can have a huge impact on whether you end up on a substance or not. And like I said, some of these patients, it's like, man, so many awful things happened to you so young. And, you know, your stepdad introduced you to alcohol when you were 13, and your father had a bad alcohol use disorder. Well, yeah, no wonder you ended up with the same thing, right? You can start out with that genetic link and end up with a lot of traumas on the way that make that more likely.
And when it comes to Wisconsin, you could also just live in Wisconsin.
There's a lot of alcohol there. Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. And so, well, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us about what your specialty has looked like, what it looks like at your hospital, also what it seems like is available also in Wisconsin. But Dr. Scott Saunders, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Of course. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, John Gerda will be here. Very much looking forward to that. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. So
talk
fun.
To you. Yes. Bye, guys. So you were great. I'll text you later.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.